Hello everyone, welcome back to Coaches on the Couch, the podcast hosted by me, Louise Rogers, and my friend Rachel Birchmore. Rachel and I are also the coaches behind Step Up, the leadership development program we design and deliver, mostly for consultants working in the built environment. And you can find out more about Step Up on www.stepuplondon.com. Now, this is the second part of a two-part podcast with sustainability leads from several different organisations. Rachel and I are talking with Rosie Bard of Orms, Laura Barron of Purcell, Eric Bull of Studio Agri West, Stephanie Crombie of Morrow & Lorraine, and Ruth Oates of Bureau 4. And in this episode, we're focusing on the power of collaboration and the importance of sharing best practice and knowledge. We also touch on how, when confronted by so much information about the importance of action to address the climate emergency, one can safeguard one's own mental health. And as we recorded this episode during Mental Health Awareness Week, it seemed particularly important to talk about this issue. So we join the discussion just as Rachel is asking the guys about collaboration. Enjoy.
Just wonder if we can say a little bit about, like, over the last few years, there's been quite a big increase in initiatives such as LETI and other forums which seem to be helpful to collaborate between different organisations. I just wonder if somebody could say something about that and where that's going.
I was going to let Rosie talk because she's the one that's involved in the most of the groups that we're all involved in.
I was waiting for Rosie as well.
Yeah, I mean, the industry groups are just really fantastic industry-wide collectives of all different kinds of people across the built environment who can come together and really share knowledge at a bigger scale to really move things forwards and also come to consensus. You know, if you take whole life carbon, for an example, a few years ago, there was a number of different documents out there, different targets, and no one was really quite sure what it was they were trying to meet. But then you get the LETI producing documents, which are really great explainers for all different kinds of people to be able to understand the topics and to be able to bring them up in client meetings and say, here, you know, this is someone who's done some really great research on this. This is what we're trying to do. And the Net Zero Building Standard, again, is, you know, another level of huge amount of experience in the room tackling something which is going to be, you know, a world leading documentation on how we can set about a method for having a net zero building. So it's just really exciting to be able to be in those conversations with people and learn from their experience as well as contribute to them as well.
I think what I'd add to that as well is the thing that I find the most encouraging is how willing people are to open source different things. So organizations that have spent quite a lot of money investing on particular products or toolkits and things that they're happy to just share openly, I think is really encouraging, because ultimately we all need to be kind of upskilling very rapidly. And I think also the fact that myself, Rosie, Steph and Eric are all in a kind of heads of sustainability group where we meet regularly and kind of share and brainstorm different things and just talk about what we're all doing separately in practice that we can all learn from each other, I think is certainly something that's new to the industry that I've not experienced before. It's very previously it's been very much kind of hiding your notes and not really wanting to share that much information. But yeah, I think it's a brilliant thing to be doing.
It's hugely supportive as well, isn't it? You know, a lot of us, this is a new role for us and there isn't really a precedent. So to be able to actually discuss it with other people in the same situation as you is, you know, super helpful for moving conversations forwards.
It's really heartening to hear, isn't it, about everybody just really wanting to share everything they have to collaborate and try and find the best way forwards. It's kind of like the competitive edge that might have been there with, like, developing the next best thing is kind of not there in the same way, is it? This one, you're not keeping your cards to your chest and everyone wants to share best practice, which is great. I think I'm just thinking, I don't know if there's the direct equivalent for me as a project manager, but certainly we do a certain amount of that with the UK GBC and to a certain amount with the NLA. But I just take on board the fact that you four meet regularly. It's just making me think, what can I be doing better? So, you know, if I take anything away from that conversation now, it's like I need to find my counterpart in other project management organisations and do the same. So, yeah, thanks, guys. That's really good for me to know.
I'm sure somebody will be sending an invoice, Ruth. It's interesting that the, because that happens in other sort of disciplines. I know there's a similar thing for HR and a similar thing in marketing within the architects. It's interesting that it's sort of confined to the architects, actually. That's what I was thinking when somebody said, you know, the four architectural leads meet. I wonder,
is it just the four of you as architects that meet, and is it a bigger, wider group?
I don't know how many there are now.
It's over 100.
And it's not just London as well, which I think is really important. It is national.
What's the forum?
It's just an email chain.
Laura hosted the last one.
Oh wow.
It's just, so it started from Diana Dana from Harold Tompkins, I think, started it. And it was just, there was maybe 2 years ago, maybe a bit more, there was a few heads of sustainability. I joined it just over a year ago, and there was maybe 20-ish people. Mm-hmm. And now it's in the last year, just because of the number of people in this role, it's just kind of shot up. So it's essentially a Google group, and we meet up and kind of have a sort of rough agenda of what to discuss, and then go to the pub.
It
is good, because I think, like, we meet once a month. There's a kind of focus of kind of things that have happened in the last month, things that are going to happen in the next month. There's an idea of, like, you know, people bring to the table things they're struggling with, and it's just really nice because we all share the same problems. Everything that I've encountered, Rosie's encountered, Laura's encountered, Eric's encountered, and if I haven't, then I will. Like, or if I haven't encountered yet, then I will at some point. And it's just great to have that support group, because you are usually, like, there's not many of you in sustainability in your office. Like, we're a few people, so sharing those lessons learned just makes life so much easier. You know, how do we charge for services? Are we charging for services? Who's doing POE and how is it implemented? How do we get our clients on board with particular things? The last one, we were looking at carbon offsets. It's like, you know, where, what we, how are we pricing carbon? Because, you know, there isn't a kind of industry. I'll just add kind of the last point. The reason why there's so many organizations is because the construction industry really stepped up in, like, kind of lack of government policy on, like, anything to do with carbon or sustainability. And, like, you know, EPCs are a bit rubbish, POE is not mandated, all of this kind of stuff. Like, you know, it's getting there, but it's slow. And I think we're all aware of the need for speed when it comes to addressing climate emergency. And that's why, you know, it's absolutely so incredible the amount of work that the construction industry put in for free to kind of fill the gap, the knowledge gaps, where we need to be up to 2050.
Yeah, you mentioned isolation, and it makes me think that events such as Footprint, because we're hoping that this podcast will come out around about that time, how important is it? I mean, these informal networks that you've started to establish, or that you've established for yourselves, how important is it that there are industry networks that are focused specifically on this issue, do you think? What difference does it make to you as experts within your practices?
I can kick off with this one. It's hugely important. You know, the need for dialogue and, you know, sharing information and sharing success stories and understanding pitfalls and learning lessons from what we're doing right and especially from what we're not doing right. It's never been more important time than now to get our heads together. And it's, you know, I was at Footprint last year, you know, and it gathers people from all walks of the industry, from financiers to developers and clients, and you know, everyone's working towards the same ambition, but everyone comes from their own bubble as well, and we all have different agendas. So understanding how we can work together, you know, the heads of sustainability group amongst architects has been absolutely amazing since I've joined, for me personally. But the need for that across the wider disciplines, you know, the complex projects that we work on require collaboration, and that determines the success or lack of success in your project oftentimes.
It's great to hear so much optimism, actually, particularly around those things like collaboration. Laura, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, I was just going to add to Eric, I completely agree with what he said. And I do think forums like and kind of conferences that have this particular focus are really important. I think the thing that I'm wary of is just making sure that the conversations remain honest and that people can trust the information that's being put out, particularly around whole life carbon and, you know, those kind of narratives where it, as Steph said, it's not this isn't regulated. There isn't kind of currently a framework for how we do this the right way, although obviously that's part of what Rosie's working on. But it's kind of making sure that, yes, if we're sharing lessons, it's not always just like, oh, haven't we done well, pat ourselves on the back. It has to be, this was hard, this didn't work, and this did work, and this is the thing that we can take and learn from on in the next project. I think that's a really important thing to keep in mind and keep watch of.
I hear that. So there needs to be sort of authentic sharing of experiences with both the things that that have been positive about it and the things that haven't been so positive, and not shying away from talking about those in the interest of everybody learning.
I was just going to jump in on that, bringing together what Laura and Eric were saying, that the need for collaboration, especially at these events across the industry, not just within the kind of architecture or contractor silo, because often where these great ideas fall down is because when we try to do them in practice, there's something we've not thought about. Demo contractors don't work in that way, or may contractors aren't set up to do something. So to be able to share those problems with the industry can really help us actually turn these ideas into actionable things on projects. And I think that's the bit that's really important right now.
I just came back from Wastebuild in Amsterdam last week, and it was brilliant because because it wasn't in the UK, they had lots of kind of European kind of architecture practices and others showing what they'd done. And it was so refreshing to see the kind of different types of buildings and the different challenges and the different kind of successes that other architecture practices on the continent have had. And, you know, particularly in Amsterdam, they've got just an incredible wealth of, like, you know, innovation around architecture, and they had it in kind of NDSM, which is a little kind of shipbuilding factory. So it felt really different and really kind of optimistic. I guess my slight kind of caveat with these conferences is I think they are just such a hotbed of knowledge and knowledge sharing. But you go there and you think, wow, we've got all the solutions, this is incredible, you know, why we should we've solved it all. And then you kind of go back to site and you realize it is a little bit of an echo chamber, because everybody there's already subscribed to like the solutions and everything we need to do. And you know, the positivity, it's so refreshing, and absolutely you need it now and again, and you need to kind of be in this environment. But it's also just being aware that that's not how everybody thinks and not how everything works, and it really is the kind of like creme of the successes, and we need to take all those lessons learned and apply it to kind of perhaps the projects that aren't driven in quite the same kind of innovative ways. Briefly on Laura's point, I just wanted to mention, this was spoken about on the head of sustainability's group a few weeks ago, Bennett's have just released their Tell the Truth charter. So I just want to give a little shout out to you, because it's really brilliant, and it just talks about greenwashing in architecture and just honesty and being really kind of truthful about how we talk about net zero, sustainability, low carbon. You know, what do those definitions mean? Because brandishing things, you know, as Laura said, these aren't regulated at the moment, so anything can be brandished low carbon, doesn't actually mean anything. But we need to, you know, be custodians of that narrative, and it's got to mean something for it to be meaningful. And so, you know, that being able to tell the truth and being responsible for those definitions is super important, and kind of within this role, and calling out those who aren't telling the truth as well, I think is something that we, you know, you can't just rely on everyone to be honest. We need to hold people accountable and be responsible for, you know, this is why these things are successful, and this is why, and this is what we could do better.
Why they're important, which exactly. I mean, one of the things I did want to ask, because we're aware that we're recording this episode during Mental Health Awareness Week, and the theme of that week this year is anxiety, and I just wanted to touch on that, because you are a group of people that have made this your thing. You have read, learned, listened, thought about. Steph, you said that one of your motivators was having a bit of a meltdown reading that report in 2018. How do you look after your own? First of all, do you experience that kind of climate anxiety? And how do you look after your own mental health when you're thinking about these issues around climate change all the time?
It is, yes, it is definitely when you're part of your job is reading all the worst parts of the news. Yeah, it's definitely not. It's not as easy to bury your head in the sand. And I've certainly experienced, I try and get around our regional offices or local offices and hold workshops and things. And I did one once in I won't name which studio, but one of the team members came up to me afterwards and was like, I don't think I'm going to come to one of your talks again. It was so depressing. And I was like, no, but you kind of left partway through. I try and start in with these are the facts. This is depressing. You need to understand this, but then move on to this is how we have influence as designers and as architects and people working in the built environment, and how we can make the kind of changes that we need to happen. So it is definitely hard, and it's definitely a balance. And there's always times in my week where I don't feel like I'm at my peak optimist. But I think definitely a lot of the things that we've already talked about kind of sharing that load, talking to people that are doing similar things. Steph did a plug already. I'm going to do a plug for ACAN. If anybody is interested in this topic and want to get involved and see some genuine power, join ACAN, because it is.
What's ACAN stand for?
Architects Climate Action Network. And they're doing so much amazing stuff. And it is just every time I go to any meetings or talk to anyone within ACAN, Steph is also in ACAN, and Rosie, I think. But anyone, they're just so passionate, and so like there's so much power and genuine willingness to try and do everything that we possibly can. I think joining things like that definitely helps me.
So it's drawing strength from others.
Yes, not being an individual.
Yeah, Steph.
I just wanted to add to everything Laura said. Big fan of ACAN, and even if you're not an architect, so we're in the natural materials group, I'm a coordinator for the natural materials group. We've got loads of people who are just suppliers or home builders, doesn't matter. You don't have to be an architect to join it. It's just a great resource for if you're interested in the built environment and sustainability. And then just on the kind of sense of eco-anxiety, if you like, I think what's really difficult, and probably what Laura touched on in the kind of first point, is navigating between the macro and the micro is what's what is really hard, but also very hopeful. So the kind of big facts about, you know, how much 40% of the UK carbon emissions come from construction, you're like, well, my little house extension is not going to make a big difference in that massive dent. Or like, you know, those kind of how much waste the construction industry makes, you're like, well, me recycling this, like, you know, bit of flooring isn't going to make a big difference. That navigating between what you're doing and the enormous impact of the construction industry is really challenging. But through kind of collective action, through whichever means or kind of you want to do that, whether it's whichever support networks you're interested in, that's the only way really that you kind of can reconciliate the macro and the micro. They're the things, that's when you feel like you're making a difference, because it's not just you, it's you and so many other people. And that's kind of, for me, given me loads of hope and loads of optimism for change.
Great. And Ruth, I think you want to...
Yeah, I think just, I suppose, from the sort of project management perspective, I know we're not specifiers, so perhaps, you know, we don't have as great an impact as, you know, architects and engineers might, but it can be totally overwhelming, can't it, reading all the bad news, but then you oscillate between that and feeling optimistic about all the really goodwill and all the collaboration and all the knowledge sharing that's going on. And I guess, you know, what we're trying to instill in our project managers is that, you know, you can do your part, I suppose, on the micro scale. You as a human, as a person occupying this planet, can do your bit, and that will then start to influence how you work on your projects and how you talk to your clients and how we roll out everything there. I've made a note of the ACAN. Thank you for the prompt on that. Yeah, just to kind of say that, really, that I think there is reason for optimism there, and we do need to just keep plugging away. I keep it in control by thinking, as long as I'm doing something, then I'm moving it in the right direction. And I think it's a call to action for everybody, really, isn't it? Just to do something. It's the collective action that's going to get us there, not just the good people on this call. It's everyone. Yeah.
It's about kind of anxiety to action, really. Rosie, anything to add to that.
Yeah, I was just going to really echo what everyone else has said. I think it is really hard because you become really conscious that every decision you make has a potentially huge impact, particularly in the construction industry. You know, you can make a design decision in the morning, which has more impact in terms of carbon than your business's yearly footprint. But I think all you can do is figure out where you can make the most difference and start there. Our director, Colin, always likes to say that we should celebrate the small wins because everything is a step forwards in the right direction. And when you add them all together, you know, you get that sustainable outcome that you're looking for.
Nice. Okay, everyone, we're coming to the end of our time, which is unsurprising with a full couch. So we're just going to move on to our final question, which is if you could pass on one point of learning to our listeners about how they might lead sustainability within their organisations, focused on the leadership element of this, what would you pass on?
I suppose leading by example has got to be up there somewhere. I think, you know, you've got to do your bit and take some action and show that it's higher on your priority list than it might have been once upon a time. Yeah. And then Brilliant. Hopefully somebody else will also raise it up their priority list and we can go from there.
That's great. Thanks, Ruth.
I was just going to say, like I said before, you know, one step at a time, figure out where you can make the maximum impact, start there and then keep building and you'll get there.
Good advice.
Understand who you're working with. So when I first joined Purcell, the first thing I did was like a climate literacy knowledge audit. So just understanding there was loads of people that already had skills that were really passionate, and it's just tapping into people that have already got that interest or skill set and then utilizing that in the first instance is a really easy win.
I like that. That's
great.
I would probably go with back to my kind of design narrative analogy, like really nail down why you're doing what you're doing. And like just kind of try and like simplify and impart that knowledge to the design team. And also like it's a collaborative thing. Like you'll say something, but nothing I say will be 100% accurate, I'm sure. But there will be other things that people can bring to the table. You know, it's about collaboration and conversation and learning from each other. You know, everybody's got so much knowledge in the construction industry about how we build things and where we're going and who to talk to. And I think, you know, when we talk to kind of tradesmen or whether we talk to clients or whether we talk to insurers, like they all have so much to give into like this kind of narrative about why we're building this building or doing this master plan or, you know, doing a bit of research. And I think that kind of, it's that kind of richness of canvas and context and bringing that all together, I think is just makes for a really successful project as well as sustainable project.
Great. Thanks, Steph. And Eric?
Yeah, I think sort of building on what Steph was just saying, but I think, you know, sustainable design often is thought of as something different from just good design when really they're the same thing. You know, you want to keep the heat in your building, you want to respond appropriately to the sun and to the seasons. You know, that's about orientation. And a lot of the best sustainability moves you can make in your design are for free. So, you know, just make it less about the extras and make it more about the kind of essence of what your building is. And you know, good design will be sustainable design.
Right. Really good advice there. Thank you, everybody.
I think there were some really useful learning points there. Leading by example, thinking about where you can make maximum impact.
Yeah.
Understanding what your starting point is, that thing about doing a literacy audit.
Yeah.
And then that storytelling. I love canvas and context. And Eric, remembering that sustainable design is good design is a very good place to end that discussion.
Indeed.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, everyone. Amazing input, great learning points, hopefully for our listeners. And that brings us to the end of the podcast. Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.